Blog Talk Radio.
And the bass keeps running.
Good evening. We're glad to have you here tonight on All About Service Dogs Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, we have a really good and exciting guest that we're going to hear from after a little bit. We have Dr. Veronica Morris, who is the president and executive director of Psychiatric Service Dog Partners. She'll be discussing a lot of things of interest to us in line with psychiatric service dogs and their handlers. And when she gets through, we'll open up the phone lines in case anybody would like to call in and ask questions. You could call in at 646-668-2499. And you could use that number to call in to listen. You could send that number to your friends to call in to listen. Or you could have them look at the website that you've seen posted online, and they could get in that way. Now, if you call in on the 646 number and you just want to listen, that's fine. Just call in and you could listen, and it'll be fine. I won't bother you at all. But if you have a question or a comment that you want to make, then press 1 on your screen pad, and then I'll know that you want to ask a question. That's kind of like raising your hand and alerting me that you would like to ask a question or make a comment, and we'll get you on. So, Veronica, how are you tonight, and what you have for us this evening?
Thanks for having me. I'm doing fine. I wanted to talk about a few things today. First, I wanted to introduce myself. Then I also wanted to talk a little bit about our organization, Psychiatric Service Dog Partners, and then just go into some kind of common questions that people might have, be able to answer your questions and any of the listeners' questions along the way. I'm a very interactive type of person, so I enjoy it when people ask me questions and direct the conversation to where they're interested in. So I guess I will get started by introducing myself. I'm Dr. Veronica Morris. My PhD is not in psychology. It is in environmental science, policy, and management from UC Berkeley. And I had two service dogs help me with getting my degree. My first service dog was named Sabrina. I found her when I was in graduate school in North Carolina, and my therapist had suggested, I have bipolar disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, and they used to think I had agoraphobia, but now they're starting to think it might be some form of an autism spectrum disorder. So my therapist at the time recommended that I volunteer at the local animal shelter to help out with my issues. So I started volunteering, and I would take the dogs out for walks every day. And so I met lots of dogs this way. I would take them out. They would run to the end of the leash, run around, sniff things, you know, be a typical dog. There was this one dog, a Weimaraner pit bull mix named Sabrina. And she didn't do that. When I took her out, she came and sat on my feet and looked up into my eyes. And there was just something so calming and comforting about her that I fell in love. We weren't thinking of getting a dog at that point, but she was put on the kill list, and so I just couldn't let her go. So my husband and I decided to adopt her. And she started out pretty much right away alerting me to my mood swings and panic attacks. At the time, I didn't know she was doing that. I just thought she was acting weird sometimes. She would just come and sit and stare at me or sit on my feet and just look up at me. But after a while and talking with my therapist, we realized that she was actually helping me become aware of my mood swings and impending panic attacks. So I was on the medication merry-go-round for a while, and I had moved to California, and the medications were just not working. I had just been on Lamictal, which gave me Stevens-Johnson syndrome, which is a life-threatening rash of the mucous membranes. I had a medication that made it so I couldn't read, so my husband had to read my textbooks and papers out loud to me while I was in school, which was quite difficult. There was another medication that made me faint all the time. I suffered lithium toxicity 3 times. It was just, I could not find a good medication. So my psychiatrist at the time, I had told him about Sabrina and how she was able to help me at home. We decided that I would go ahead and train her as a psychiatric service dog. So that's when I first kind of entered the realm of psychiatric service dogs. That was in about 2005. And I used the support of 2 online organizations, Psychiatric Service Dog Society and also Dogster.com. And I was asking lots of questions to people who already were having psychiatric service dogs. I learned the laws. I became well-versed in service dog, stuff. And things were going well for a while. Then Sabrina got arthritis, and so she started not being able to work very much anymore. She would have achy joints, and so on cold days or cold and rainy days, I would have to leave her at home because she was just in too much pain to come out and work with me. At that time, I decided to look for my second service dog, and I decided on Standard Poodle as the breed. And I found a breeder that was breeding for service dog temperament or personality and purchased a puppy from them. And that is my poodle Ollivander, or Ollie for short. He was a very good puppy up until his teenager stage. When he was a teenager, he was a bit of a handful, but he outgrew that and was turned into a really great service dog after about 2 years of training. Unfortunately, when we lived in Lompoc, California, there was somebody in our apartment complex who let their chihuahua run loose, and their chihuahua attacked Ollie every time it saw Ollie. And so this happened probably about 20 or 30 times before I was able to figure out what apartment the chihuahua belonged to and was able to get animal control to do anything about it. But by the end of all that, Ollie was just totally traumatized and became very barky around any other dog because he was just terrified that the dogs were going to attack him. So he had to be retired early. So about 3 or 4 months ago, we moved to South Carolina to be closer to family. And I got a new service dog in training. She's a Japanese Chin, which is a small breed, about 7.5 pounds. Her name is Hestia. And I've been working with her just on the basics, and we just completed our first puppy class, and she got her AKC Star Puppy Certification. And so I'm hoping that I can also train her in about 2 years' time to become another wonderful service dog. Do you have any questions for me about anything that I've said or want more clarification on anything?
Well, I can chip in and pitch in and ask a question. You're on your third service dog.
Mm-hmm.
And, what happened to the Sabrina and Ollie? Are they still with you as pets or as retired service dogs or...
Well, my personal opinion is that the service dog gives me so much life that I want to give as much back to my service dog as they've given to me. So I don't rehome my service dogs. I keep them until they pass on for other reasons. And so Sabrina is no longer living. But Ollie is still living and happy, and, well, he just got over bloat, so that wasn't too happy. But other than that, he's been doing pretty well.
How's Ollie's response to your Hesbia?
Hesbia?
Your new service.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
how's Ollie? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
At first, oh, that's okay. At first, this happened both with Sabrina and Ollie. At first, he was kind of a little bit confused and a bit miffed about another dog being kind of like my primary helper, you know, because I started taking Hestia out and leaving Ollie at home. So he was a little bit kind of upset and confused at first. But I think now that it's been several months, he's kind of enjoying his more relaxed lifestyle. You know, he is allowed to get away with a few more things around the house because I know it's not going to affect his public access behavior since he's not going in public as a service dog anymore. So I think that now he's pretty happy with it. And the same thing happened with Sabrina. She actually decided to retire on her own. I was still working her when Ollie was a puppy, and she one day just started showing stress signs when we were heading into work. And those continued for a week, and I realized she was tired of working, and so I retired her then. And then she was happy to be a couch dog.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. This is just for me. Somebody else might have the same question. But how long was it between the time that Sabrina started showing the stress signs and you retired her as a service dog and the time that she passed or was put down?
Let's see. She was, I think, 8 and a half when she retired from service work. I think it was 8 or 8 and a half. And she was, I believe, 12 years old when she passed on. So
okay.
She lived a lot longer.
Okay, great. Well, go ahead with your story.
Well, I guess the next thing I'd like to do is talk about psychiatric service dog partners. Is that okay, or do you have more questions about my history with service dogs?
Now I'm ready for you to go ahead and introduce your group and talk about your group.
All right. Well, the leaders of psychiatric service dog partners, we met as members of another psychiatric service dog group. And about 3 years ago, we decided to start our own organization. We just got nonprofit status, 501c3 status, so we can now accept donations and everything, which is really nice. And I'll just read you our mission statement. Psychiatric Service Dog Partners' purpose is to promote the mental health of people using service dogs for psychiatric disabilities by educating, advocating, providing expertise, facilitating peer support, and promoting responsible service dog training and handling. And the way that we go about doing this is we provide information on our website, which is psychdogpartners.org. We have a private listserv, which is a free online support group, which I'll tell you more about later. We have an annual convention where people from across the United States and even some from Canada come and join us, and we have talks about, you know, psychiatric service dogs, presentations, and stuff like that. We consult with other groups and policymakers. We write a lot of advocacy letters, and we make presentations and media appearances. And there's a common misconception that our organization provides dogs. We do not provide service dogs. We do not train service dogs. We do not certify service dogs. What we do is we support people who have, are in the process of getting, or have had psychiatric service dogs. And we do this mainly through our listserv. I guess it would help if I explained what a listserv is. The listserv is a free online support group, and it is basically a way to have a group conversation all in your email inbox. And so what happens is when somebody wants to say something, they send an email to one email address that we call the listserv email address, and it gets automatically deposited into everybody's email inboxes who is signed up for the listserv. Then when somebody wants to reply back to the question or comment and say something on their own, they just hit the reply button, and the email automatically goes back to the listserv email address and again gets put in everybody's email inboxes. And so it's a really good way to talk with other people about everything service dog related, from how to handle the general public, to how to train work and tasks, to how to train riding on an elevator or an escalator, or you know, any question relating to psychiatric service dogs. And so if anybody is interested, oh, one more thing. I should warn you, there are a lot of messages. There are about 50 to 100 messages a day, but most people don't read all the messages. Most people, they just read the subject line of the messages, and if the subject line is not interesting, they just hit delete and just read the messages with an interesting subject line. So if anybody is listening out there and wants to join in on the listserv, you can find the information on our website, which is www.psychdogpartners.org/resources/support-listserv. And listserv is spelled L-I-S-T-S-E-R-V. And it is, does require a phone call to join the listserv, just as a kind of a screening call. And so if you're interested, then you can give me a call at 805-876-4256. Again, that's 805-876-4256.
Okay, that's great. And I'm going to ask you to put a written form of that information in the comments on this video after we're done with the show. And then people can actually see it and know the number they have to call, and then, you know, see the listserv email address as well. And that will help facilitate that. Also, your website for the organization, you can put that there too, and that will help do that. And, of course, some of us old folks will remember the listserv as predating things like Facebook and these different sites. The listserv will be used as the online chat groups, if you will. And so that might help some people understand, oh, yeah, I remember those. And some people are still using them. A lot of people, you know, move their listserv over onto a Facebook or one of the other sites. Now, let me ask you this. You mentioned that a lot of the people in your group was part of another group, and then you decided to start this new group. What were some of the factors that went into deciding, one, there was a need for a new group, and two, to start this new group?
We were members of an organization that, well, it was Psychiatric Service Dog Society. We're Psychiatric Service Dog Partners. I know the names are similar. And we loved that organization and gave our lives to that organization. Unfortunately, there was some mental health issues with the leader of the organization, and it ended up that that organization got shut down. So the people who had been in leadership positions, for example, the moderators of the listserv, and people who had been involved in like a lot of training discussions and things like that, we decided that we needed to fill that gap, and so we started our own organization, and it's all volunteer. Every one of us who runs the organization has a disability, so we, you know, we just really felt like we were called to help other people the way that we were helped by the old organization.
That's wonderful. You mentioned something else that I had to kind of smile because a lot of people who qualify for a psychiatric service dog are leaders in a lot of these psychiatric service dog groups. The manifestation of their disability makes it really difficult to deal with them as leaders of some of these groups. And so I had to smile and say, okay, I got that. I get it. And so, you know, there are a lot of groups that you can find, a lot of groups that you can be part of, and a lot of them have certain issues. And so that's why I wanted to give you the opportunity to tell us about your group and the need for a new group and how that
mm-hmm.
went. And I had another question, and you answered it before I even asked it, which lets me know I'm right on target about what void is your group filling. And you did that, and your group is actually carrying the mission further with the conferences and the annual conventions and these kind of things. And people can indeed get some support and some education and some help in meeting their goals as a handler of a psychiatric service dog. And that's real cool.
Yes,
so
I agree.
Go ahead and continue to share with us.
All right. Well, I'd next like to talk about our conventions. So we have once a year a convention where people from all across the United States and some from Canada, hi Canadians who are listening in, who come together, and we have just an excellent, excellent time. I will give you the website address for our convention page, and I will also post it in the comments like you've requested after the show. The convention webpage is www.psychdogpartners.org/resources/convention. You can also look under the resources tab on the main page for the Psychiatric Service Dog Convention. And we just had our annual convention this past April. This year it was in Rock Hill, South Carolina, but in the past it's also been in Solvang, California. And we don't know yet where it's going to be next year, but we're trying to move it around the country a little bit so that more people are able to attend. And this year the kind of big draw that we had was some emergency medical response training. We had an ambulance team come to talk with us about, you know, what they would need to know, like that before transporting your service dog with you in the ambulance. And we talked with them about how we could train our service dogs to, you know, accept the medical response team doing things like CPR and things. Some of us went down on the ground, lay down on the ground like we were out and unconscious, and had the EMTs pretend to work on us so that we could see what our dogs would do and what training we needed to do to make our dogs be more comfortable in these type of emergency situations. And we also took the dogs onto the ambulance, and the dogs got to walk around inside the ambulance, you know, experience the smells, the sounds. Well, not the sirens. They weren't allowed to turn those on because it wasn't an emergency. But everything else, the dogs got to experience. So that was the big draw for this past year convention. But really, what the conventions are for is for support with other psychiatric service dog handlers. And it's kind of amazing, actually. You go to one of these conventions, and before the convention, everyone is terrified. Everyone is like, oh, my gosh, my dog is probably going to bark, and oh, my gosh, there are going to be all these other dogs, and what if my dog doesn't sit when I tell it to, and what if my dog gets restless during a presentation, and so people are really worried beforehand. Then when people come and get together, it's kind of like when you go out with a big group of service dog teams, it's kind of like there's a golden net that's connecting everybody who's at a convention. And you go out and you just feel so strong, so empowered, and so at peace with yourself and with your station in life because you are around people who understand just like you, they need a service dog, and they are taking charge of their mental illness by using a service dog. And it is really a wonderful, wonderful experience. I can't say enough about it. I try to go every year.
Okay, now tell me this. Are there dates set for next year's convention?
No, the dates aren't set yet, but we're thinking it's probably going to be in April again. It used to be over the summer, but it's just so hot in most of the country over the summer that it really just wasn't very practical. We had, you know, dogs overheating, and it was just a lot of stress. So April is probably where we'll keep it because it's nice enough weather out in most parts of the country to be able to, you know, walk to nearby stores or restaurants because most people don't drive or don't they fly into the convention. So, but it's not so hot that you are, you know, going to wilt when you're out in the heat.
And the location as far as city, state of the convention, does it change year after year or?
Yes, we're trying to have it change every year. We had, our organization is only about 3 years old, and so the first two conventions we had were in Solvang, California, which is about like an hour and a half away from Santa Barbara. And that was where I and one of the co-vice presidents was living at the time. And so we had it there for 2 years in a row because it was convenient. A lot of people in California have psychiatric service dogs, but we really wanted to include other people in other parts of the country too. So that's why we shifted to the East Coast, and now I'm living in Rock Hill, South Carolina, so that's why we decided Rock Hill, South Carolina. Next year, it's really, who knows? We've tossed around ideas from the Midwest to the Northeast. You know, they're anywhere, pretty much. If you're a listserv member and you have an ideal place that you would like to have a convention, you can just email me, and, you know, I'll put it in our list of cities to search for.
Okay, that's wonderful. What types of, I mean, is the convention hosted at a hotel? Is it hosted by a certain brand of hotels? Speak on that a little bit.
Well, we tend to like having the conventions in a hotel. Ideally, well, the main reason is because a lot of us who have mental illnesses are quite scared of going to new places, venturing out in public and everything. And so having one location where people, they can stay, they sleep there, they, you know, go to the conference room, they can hang out around the hotel grounds, things like that, it really makes it a lot easier to have the hotel that we have the convention at. We so far have not received any funding for the convention. We've received some donations from some companies, like some dog food companies, Banfield Vet Hospital, and things like that. So we're hoping that more companies like hotel chains or dog supply stores or anything like that, we're hoping that now that we're a 501c3 status that we'll be able to get more donors. We try to keep it really low, the price for admission really low. It was $60 per person this past year, and that is simply to include $65, sorry. It was simply to include the rental of the room at the hotel, and then people paid for their own rooms, and people paid for their own food, their own drinks, their own everything else. The convention fee was just for the room. And we even had some people camping out nearby because they couldn't afford a hotel room. So, you know, that's another option for people coming to the convention as well. We would also like to, if possible, if we ever get a significant funding amount, we would really like to have scholarships for people to be able to come to the convention and maybe get their hotel room paid for or get their flight paid for or some type of help, because it is just such a wonderful experience that we feel every psychiatric service dog team should experience.
Yeah, that's lofty. Now, you say the convention's been, there's been three of them so far. How has mm-hmm. the convention grown in numbers, and what are the, you know, numbers of folks who are getting to experience these conventions at this time?
The two California conventions, we had about 20 people at each of the Solvang California conventions, and personally, 20 to 30 is kind of my goal. The other organization that we used to be part of had some events where there were like 60 people, 100 people, and that was, for me personally, that was really difficult because there was just so many people, I was really overwhelmed. So we want to keep it between 20 and 30. Unfortunately, for the Rock Hill, South Carolina convention, a lot of people signed up and then had to cancel because they got new puppies. It's apparently puppy year on our listserv. We have so many new puppies on our listserv, I can't even count. There are probably like 10 or 15 new puppies on our listserv right now. And so we only ended up having probably about 15 people at the Rock Hill convention.
Okay. And you say your goal number, what you feel like is the optimum number, is about 30 people.
Yep.
Or 30 teams.
Yes, 30 teams, yeah. And, you know, you're allowed to bring, a spouse or something like that, or if the person using the service dog is a minor, they have to come with a guardian. But it's not like a family vacation where you can bring your whole family and you know, stuff like that. It's a lot of very serious discussion about mental illness, about, you know, what is causing maybe your flashbacks or your anxiety, how you can train your dog to help. So it's not appropriate for children unless they are children who have a mental illness and have a psychiatric service dog. So there is a very serious side to the convention as well as the fun side of going out to dinner with, you know, 15 service dogs and all that kind of stuff. And again, the children who come to our convention and with their psychiatric service dogs have all been very mature children and been able to, participate safely in our convention.
That's wonderful. You just brought up the idea of children and minors and their parents. Do you have any of the younger children where their parent is actually the handler of the service dog for the child? Do you have any of those that are members of the group? And if you do, do you have any instruction, any in classes or anything like that for them at the conferences?
I'm not aware that we have anyone right now who's a member of our listserv who's part of a triad team, but there could be somebody who doesn't post very often who is on our listserv. So we haven't had any programs at the convention geared towards service dogs for children because it's mostly adults who come to our convention. Very few children with service dogs come to the convention. If there were more that were part of the group, then we would definitely, try to schedule some more activities like that. And as to the triad training, we do support that, but generally speaking, our listserv feels that a really young child is not able to be responsible for their own service dog. Like, let's say you're talking about a six-year-old child who maybe has some disability that impedes them from taking care of themselves, and now they're going to be responsible for a service dog who, needs to potty, needs to eat, needs to be left alone from other children and stuff. So we advocate having a parent or a guardian, there with the dog and the child when the child is young enough that they need it. Again, it's a case-by-case basis for everything. There are some, 13-year-olds that are definitely ready to have a psychiatric service dog of their own. They're responsible. They know it will help them. They're really good at doing the training. And then there are some 13-year-olds who, would rather go to the mall and don't really want to spend a lot of time training. They just want to kind of have a cute dog with them. So it really is a case-by-case basis. And a psychiatric service dog is a long-term commitment for a permanent disability. It's not just something, to help out in passing. It's really a long-term commitment. Therapy and medications and stuff like that should also be used in conjunction with a psychiatric service dog.
That's super. Now, is there anything else you want to tell about the conventions? And I'm sure all that information, when you get it, is going to be on your website. But is there anything else you want to speak That's for as far as the convention?
Well, if people want to know what the conventions are like, they can look at our YouTube videos. I take videos, my husband takes videos of every convention, and we've got them posted on YouTube. You should be able to find them by searching for Psychiatric Service Dog Partners Convention on YouTube. You can also go to our convention webpage, which again is psychdogpartners.org/resources/convention, and click on the different years of the convention, and from there you can see pictures and links to videos of things that have happened at the previous conventions. Again, the conventions really are the best time of our year. We look forward to them all year long. We talk about them all year long. I just can't say enough good things about the conventions.